and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can listen to us 24/7 by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Want to thank the Law Group. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com for their support of the program this morning. We start off with what has been a wild situation unfolding in Brunswick County over the last couple of days. A major wildfire continues to burn. According to the latest details this morning out of the North Carolina Forest Service, the official name for the fire is the Sunset Road Fire. It is burning in the town of Boiling Spring Lakes this morning, BSL, after what was a weekend where it was apparently 100% contained on Friday night. You likely saw some of the smoke and the haze that was in the area. The fire then ran out of control overnight after that containment. And as of the latest details from the Forest Service this morning, they are reporting that the fire has grown to more than 1,500 acres as we stand here this morning and is only 10% contained. So 1,500 acres, 10% containment there. That has caused some air quality issues in the area, continues to cause some big questions over the continued containment of that fire that is burning this morning in portions of the middle Brunswick County, 1,500 acres, 10% contained as it stands right now. The latest details from crews, they said that the fire is still actively moving and growing in places. That's according to Forest Service Information Chief Carrie McCullen. Apparently the cold front that passed through yet a Saturday night and into Sunday morning helped with some of the fire containment, some very heavy rain falling in the area Saturday night and into Sunday morning. McCullen reported, quote, "We were able to get a measured 0.6 inch of rain on the fire, and that has helped quite a bit as far as the fire's activity for today. Our firefighting crews are actively working to put working the fire, putting in new dozer lines and reinforcing older lines that were placed at the start of the fire. According to the Forest Service, another element of the wildfire crews will continue to monitor its locations." McCullen saying, "The fire is in an area which has a lot of organic soil, which means that there is vegetation in the soil that can burn. And a lot of times, particularly in areas surrounding Boiling Spring Lakes, that vegetation has a tendency to hold fire in the root systems underneath the ground. So the coming days will really show whether or not the fire is working underground, and that could cause it to have a tendency to pop up in other areas." Alongside crews fighting the fire, the American Red Cross has opened a shelter at South Brunswick High School. That's due to some evacuation orders that were put in place. Those were lifted over the weekend. Unfortunately, those individuals were able to return home. But as it stands right now, this massive fire still burning 1,500 acres, according to details from the Forest Service. This update is from about midday yesterday. We're likely to get some additional details on that in the coming days. As it again, as it stands right now, still a very large wildfire burning out of control in, well, not completely out of control, but still burning with only 10% containment in Brunswick County. We'll keep an eye on it and pass the details along to you right here. Well, our main topic this morning, it takes us to public radio and television, NPR and PBS. These outlets are well known for many decades, were very sought after, very highfalutin institutions in which individuals went for a lot of quality public television. Of course, you had major shows specifically on the PBS side of it for many generations, their childhood and many shows coming out of outlets like PBS. However, in recent years, there have been some serious questions about the funding of public media like NPR and PBS. And this has been a very interesting discussion that has taken place on, obviously, the conservative side of the political aisle, where there is a thought and an opinion that NPR and PBS are not working within the public's best interest. And I think it's a fair discussion to have. You know, as somebody that spent years working in private media. Many of you listening this morning followed me and listened to me when I was on the radio here in Wilmington. We were a for-profit entity, meaning that we did not receive federal grants, state grants, local grants to operate a conservative talk radio station. We had an obligation to our listeners. We had an obligation to our FCC license that we did in fact receive from the federal government, but received no money to facilitate that. But it is the individual radio station's ability to operate solely on itself, and that is through advertisements. It is an advertiser-supported venture. That is what 99 or 95% of media is. When you turn on the local news and watch WECT or WWAY or WRAL, those are advertiser-supported entities. They garner viewership or listenership if it's a radio station, and in exchange for that, they are able to go out to small businesses, national companies, and various groups and say, these are how many listeners, these are how many viewers we have. We are charging X number of dollars for a 15, 30, or 60-second advertisement on our TV station or on our radio station. And that revenue that is generated from advertising pays for not only the incredibly expensive operation of a radio or television station, right? Power bills are very expensive. Renting and leasing land where radio towers and television towers sit, very, very expensive to operate. Transmitters and various pieces of equipment can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of investment to purchase new or to invest in upgrades and equipment. It is not a cheap venture. And of course, on top of that, you have all of the overhead of renting a building, having talent, on-air, you know, personalities and hosts that host your newscasts, and at least here in Wilmington used to host a morning radio show that no longer exists locally. It's an expensive endeavor, and it is single-handedly advertiser-supported. If you don't have listeners, meaning or viewers, which means you're not producing compelling enough content to draw in those audiences, well, then you go out of business. And you've seen, and it tends to be a bigger issue in more rural America, where you've got radio stations that, you know, for decades were operated by mom and pop outlets that are unfortunately closing the doors, that are unfortunately going to the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, and turning in their licenses because they can no longer cost effectively operate an AM radio station in a small town somewhere in America. It's happened all over North Carolina. There's stories every week of radio station licensees that are turning in their license and going dark, shutting off the transmitter, closing the doors because there is no longer a viable business revenue model for that station to operate. And that sucks. Radio and television are very important avenues and means of communication, especially in small town America, especially in rural communities and rural areas where there's not always high-speed broadband internet. Now you look here in southeastern North Carolina during times of natural disaster. We're a month away from hurricane season. But television and radio is a life connection during some of those events. But those stations have to operate solely by themselves. Those TV stations and those radio stations have to make sure that they are doing everything in their power to garner listenership to go out and sell advertising. There are no handouts. There are no monies flowing in from the federal or state local governments to fund those operations. It is 100% privately funded. Now, some of the companies are publicly traded, but same thing lasts there. Right. If you want somebody to invest in your company, if you're a publicly traded company, you've got to give them a reason to invest money into purchasing stock into your company. All of it is private. And it's a brutal business. Right? The media landscape has changed dramatically over the last 20 years. And it's hurting every industry, from newspapers, same thing there. How does a newspaper generate their money? Well, they charge for weekly or monthly subscriptions, and they also sell advertising. That's their revenue. That's how they're able to pay reporters to write stories. That's how they're able to pay photographers to license images to use in their newspapers. The newspaper industry is struggling mightily right now. Big time. It's unfortunately a dying medium. People are not subscribing to the newspaper anymore. Many newspapers have transitioned almost exclusively online. And now they're selling advertisements on their website and things of that nature. But there has to be a level to adapt to the times. Newspapers are in a really rough spot right now. Local television and radio stations, you're seeing major downsizing taking place there as well. As advertiser dollars are flooding to other ventures like social media, Facebook, Instagram, X, Google Ads, small businesses are not always and not necessarily purchasing advertising on radio and TV. They can go to Facebook, spend half or a quarter of what they would have spent on a television advertisement, and reach tens, if not hundreds of thousands of individuals. So money has gone to those social media platforms. That has caused newsrooms and radio stations to significantly downsize their employees because the money is just not there to sustain having as big a staff. It's a big issue for media. And so when you look at the discussion in the news at late last week on Thursday night, where President Donald Trump signed an executive order to slash taxpayer funds to PBS and NPR, while some believe that those are important ventures and important venues that need to continue to operate, my argument is very simple. If NPR and PBS want to continue to operate, then they should act as every single other media entity in the United States operates. Generate viewers, generate listeners, sell advertising, and use that as a sustainable business model. If you are producing compelling, high-quality content, that shouldn't be an issue at all. You should easily be able to go out and get advertiser dollars to continue to fund your operation. It's really not that complicated. But that's as simple of an equation as it is. But NPR and PBS receive a significant amount of money through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB. That is the entity that Congress funds every year, has continually funded for decades now, that doles out money to NPR and PBS. Now, when we look at the funding models for the two different entities, it's significantly different. NPR should be fine because the amount of money that they receive from the federal grants through CPB is relatively low. This is a chart I pulled. This is from fiscal year 2022. This is directly from NPR's website. About 8% of their, this is NPR overall, about 8% of their funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's not a small number, but it's also not, 15% of its revenue. So 8% comes from that. And however, there's another 6% that comes from federal, state, and local governments, right? In the case of North Carolina, there is funding to public media throughout the state of North Carolina and many other states as well. But only 8% of that is coming from CPP. So that money should relatively easily be able to be replaced, right? The largest funding group here for PBS and NPR rather in fiscal year 2022 was individuals. Right? If you listen to NPR, if you watch programs on PBS, you'll hear over and over again, right? This program is supported and brought to you by viewers like you who support your local PBS station, right? Individuals have decided that the content that comes out of NPR is something that they want to support. So they've gone out and they've pledged money to support their local NPR station, right? And here locally, it's WHQR. They have an audience. They have a group of people that are interested in funding their content. Great. Raise your money that way. And they've done a very good job at doing that. 17%, the next largest pot of money, comes from corporations because public radio and public television cannot, quote unquote, sell advertising. They have underwriting, corporate underwriters that fund their programming. It's kind of like an advertisement, but not exactly the same. There's some investigation potentially going on as it relates to that. So, right there, you've got over 65% of public radio funding coming from individuals and corporations. Another 10% comes from private foundations that fund NPR, 9% from colleges and universities. A lot of PBS and NPR stations are tied in with universities across the state here in North Carolina. It's the UNC system. 8%, as I mentioned, from the Corporation of Public Broadcasters, 6% federal, state, and local governments, and then there's 1% investments and other sorts of income. So NPR should be able to replace this money if, in fact, they've got an audience that continues to support their message, if they've got an audience that continues to want to support their programming. But that's their right to do so. We then turn over to PBS. Now, this is a little bit of a different story here. PBS, a large amount of money, 14%, comes from government support. That is a much more significant amount of money, and it has cost much more to operate PBS than it does NPR. That's something that you don't see in this chart. We're looking at a scale from 0 to 100%. PBS is a much more expensive venture to operate than NPR is. So that 14% of the pie is a much larger sum of money that needs to be replaced. But similar numbers to NPR, 67% of PBS's funding comes from individual contributions. I mean, 67%, that's combined. That's the number of corporate, the percentage of corporate underwriting and individual support within NPR. Is the exact same thing with PBS. So 67% coming from individual contributions. 10% coming from production and other revenues. There's a way when you have your local PBS station that pays PBS nationally for the programming. There's this kind of back and forth where money just swirls around in a circle. Federal government gives money to CBP. They give money to the member stations. Then the member stations pay that money back to PBS nationally. Kind of screwy with the funding model there. 4% from corporate and foundation support, 5% from community engagement. But that's their funding model for PBS. So large swaths of both of these entities are already receiving their money from individual support. These entities are already receiving large sums of money from their audiences, the people that enjoy listening to the content. The people that enjoy listening to the kind of quality public television, that's what NPR's or PBS's thing is, that comes out of PBR. So why is there such outrage with this whole story? Why is it unfathomable that their federal funding is cut? It's not like it's 90% of their operational revenue. It's not like it's the vast majority of the amount of money that they're taking in. In the grand scheme of things, looking at both of those charts, it's not everything. Is it a significant portion? In some cases, yes, absolutely. But they should very well be able to operate by losing, in the case of NPR, 8% of their funding. Are they going to have to make changes? Sure. Are they going to have to adjust some business models? Absolutely. But you know who else has to do that? Every single radio and television station that is not NPR or PBS in the United States of America, their funding model, if they lose advertising, if they lose viewers, therefore can no longer charge as high of a rate for advertisers, they have to adjust their model. They have to change their format. They have to change the way in which they bring you the news, bring you the music, if it's a music station. It's really not that complicated. And as I mentioned, as somebody that has spent the last almost 10 years of my life working in radio, working for for-profit entities that do not receive federal support, do not receive state support, and do not receive local support, I'd say welcome to the club. We're not in the 1950s anymore. The media landscape has changed dramatically in the last 75 years. It has changed dramatically with the invent of the internet, and the communication protocols that we use to provide information to people changing so drastically over the last 20 or 30 years, the question is a simple one. Do these entities provide the public service that is worth the money that the United States government is spending for NPR and for PBS? As it stands right now, I believe that answer is no. I was just on PBS Friday. I was on the State Line show on PBS North Carolina. It's a phenomenal show. They do a really good job at bringing individuals from across the political spectrum on. I've been on the show dozens of times. Phenomenal show, phenomenal people that work on it. The host, Kelly McCullen, is a great individual. But I would argue that if that entity wants to continue operating a show like that, then they need to find a way to fund it. The same way that I am funding this program, thanks to, you know, all of you supporting on Patreon, chipping in $5, $10, $15 a month when you believe that you're getting some value out of the show. For entities like The Law Group here in Wilmington, who've recently come on board supporting the program day in and day out. That's how this is able to be funded and operated. It's not magic. There's no check coming in from the state of North Carolina every month to fund my operation. I'm not receiving any money from the federal government to sit here and talk about the news of the day. No, not at all. If I want to make this something that is a sustainable business, I have to grow an audience and convince people to support me individually or convince companies to support it with advertising. This is how the model has worked for everybody but NPR and PBS for 100 years. When you look at the early days of radio back in the 1912, 1917, when radio was first really kind of kicking off and stations started receiving licenses at the time from the Radio Bureau, they had to find a way to operate. It was very expensive to turn on a radio station. This was very early technology. And since then, those entities, those TV and radio stations across the country have had to find a way to make enough money to not only offset all of their costs, but to make some money on top of it. It is a business. It is no different than any mom and pop shop, retail shop that you see. It is no different than any other for-profit entity that exists in the United States. And I believe that NPR and PBS should have to operate in the exact same way. Conservative talk stations do not get money from the federal government to operate. We have to play in the fair market and free market just like everybody else. We have to provide high-quality content, listener-engaged content to an audience to grow it to sell advertising. And I'm going to be honest, it absolutely pisses me off that NPR and PBS have to do none of that in some respects, and they are automatically receiving money each and every year from Congress, from the federal government. I just don't think it's right. We're no longer talking about the days of Sesame Street and all of the great educational programming that used to exist on PBS. It doesn't happen anymore. Now, yes, there are still some of those shows, absolutely. But in large part, PBS now has become a propaganda wing. NPR has become a propaganda wing. I saw this stupid post on X that I wanted to bring to this guy, Maddox, M-A-D-D-O-X. He posted this: people cheering funding cuts to NPR and PBS have never listened to it. NPR is one of the most neutral news organizations there is. It has the trait of every good news organization. It's boring. If you're feeling strong emotions watching the news, it's because it's entertainment and not news. Now, that obviously could not be further from reality. NPR has a proven track record as of late as to not being an organization that is providing free, fair, and balanced news coverage. You'll remember the story back just a couple of years ago, an individual by the name of Yuri Berliner, who worked at NPR for, 30-something years, that wrote the incredibly scathing op-ed on the editors at NPR in Washington, D.C., saying that he could no longer work at that entity because he was, you know, essentially dismayed with what's been going on. I mean, here was the headline. It ran over at the Free Press. I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. I read through this entirety on the old show here in Wilmington. I'm not going to do that this morning. It's a very long article. But he goes through all of the different stories, all of the different back and forths that caused him to believe that he could no longer work for NPR after 25 years, right in the sub-headline. Yuri Berliner, a veteran at the public radio institution, says the network lost its way when it started telling listeners how to think. And that's exactly the case. The overarching left-wing media bias out of NPR, and I think this is a bigger NPR than it is a PBS issue. PBS is way more down the middle. Now, I'm not saying they're completely down the middle, but PBS is way more down the middle than NPR is. I mean, even here locally, you can look at some of the, I'm not going to name anybody, but there are a couple of people at the local NPR affiliate here in Wilmington that are absolutely far left progressives. And it is obvious in their reporting. Every story they write is slamming and bashing Republicans. It's all that they do. Constantly, 24/7. A lot of it recently surrounding the Republican-led school board. One individual writing hit piece after hit piece after hit piece for our local NPR affiliate. It's not news. And the headline might look decent. And then you read through the story. It's not fair, balanced, down-the-middle news. And here's the thing. I'm okay with left-wing media. You'll note, nobody's saying that MSNBC needs to be shut down. Nobody's saying that CNN needs to be shut down. Those two entities are private businesses that have the opportunity to participate in the free market. They have the opportunity to produce whatever kind of content that they want, provide it to their audience, and then in turn sell it to advertisers. They have the ability to do that. And as it stands right now, they are continuing to do that, even though CNN's numbers are atrocious. MSNBC is doing great. They've had some of their highest viewership over the last couple of years that they've ever had. Right? They have found a way to convert their political ideology, their political opinions, into a successful business venture. I don't care that they produce that at all. I don't agree with it. I don't enjoy watching it. I think most of what they report and most of their coverage is incredibly far left leaning and not good traditional journalism. But I don't think that anybody should step in and shut them down. Right? The argument that is being made by individuals on the left is that Republicans are trying to shut down freedom of speech. Republicans are only interested in listening to content that comes from Fox News and Newsmax and OAN, right-wing sources of news. No, I don't think that's the argument at all. I think the argument is very simple. If you're going to receive tens of millions of dollars a year from the federal government to operate as a public broadcaster, that your political leanings, your own personal political leanings, do not get in the way of what you're doing. That's the issue with NPR. That's the issue with PBS. It's not that the content they produce is no good. It's that why are taxpayers in the United States of America funding it? When you work for a private radio or television station and you're paying federal taxes on your income for it to be sent up to Washington, D.C. to be in part redistributed to NPR and PBS, for them to produce very far left-wing content, it is absurd. It is a slap in the face to private journalists that exist all over the rest of the country that don't have the luxury of the free money from the federal government, free money from state governments that fund public broadcasting through a variety of different revenue channels and avenues. That doesn't exist for everybody else. We have to compete with the rest of the world. We have to compete with every other radio and television station. I've got to compete with every other podcast, millions of podcasts that exist across the world. There's no handout. There's no free money being doled out to me. Joe Rogan, none of these guys, Megyn Kelly, they're not receiving free money from the federal government to broadcast. If they were, Democrats would be losing their minds. Is there a place for NPR and PBS? I believe the answer is yes, unequivocally. Obviously, based on the ratings in many markets across the United States, NPR stations are very popular. People enjoy listening to NPR. People enjoy watching PBS. That's fine. That's great. I'm glad that they are able to generate an audience based on the content that they produce. But I think what needs to happen is that they need to fight in the free market just like everybody else and no longer receive a leg up on the rest of media because they are NPR or they are PBS. You can't operate as a public broadcaster with a very clear and decisive left-wing narrative and then be upset and pissed off when you get called on that. And that's exactly what's happened. These two entities have decided in recent years that they were going to go more and more left-wing with their coverage, that they were going to push their political agenda and ideology further and further and further. Right? Overton window shifts. They decided to do that. Nobody forced them to do it. The federal government didn't put a gun to NPR and PBS's head and said, keep producing left-wing content or we're pulling the trigger. That didn't happen. They chose to do that themselves. They chose that that was a way in which they would continue to build their brand, continue to build their audiences. They made that decision wholeheartedly themselves. Nobody forced it. Now they are being threatened with losing their funding from the federal government because of that choice. And so the level of sympathy that I have is non-existent. And it's not because I want PBS or NPR to be shut down. I don't think that's going to happen. I just want them to compete like everybody else. As I mentioned, I've spent almost a decade now working in private media here in Wilmington for the last 10 years. And the only way that that's possible is because we had audiences, we had listeners, therefore we could sell advertising to keep up to date with the expensive equipment, the expensive maintenance, the expensive electrical bills and backup generators and hundreds of gallons of diesel fuel that needed to be refilled when the generator fuel needed to be filled up. I mean, these are very real, very expensive things that private media has to fund with no handout, with no help from the federal government. I'm not saying that they should get that. That's not what I'm advocating for at all. But I just don't know why it's an impossible thing to imagine that NPR and PBS operate under the same manner. I don't understand why it's so hard for them to generate money and revenue while everybody else does it. Now, the reality is simple. The media landscape is changing. What used to be media norms, what used to be various things throughout newspapers, television, and radio, a lot of that has changed, and a lot of that is due to technology. And so with that, you have to adapt. You could choose not to, but what will happen is you're going to be left in the dust. Everybody will move on. Right? That's what you're seeing with newspapers. Newspapers, many of them, failed to adapt to changing media standards. Many of them have terrible websites that don't work. Their mobile app where you read the paper sucks. Right? They've not adapted to technology. That's why people have canceled their subscriptions. That's why people no longer are reading something like the Wilmington Star News. And it's not because they didn't produce good content. It's that they changed. The people's consumption habits changed. Not everybody's interested in reading a newspaper front to back every day when you can go online, go to places like ground.news and look at all of the various political opinions and various media outlets and where their political bias is and where their political lean is, right? You could just go on Google, you can go on Facebook, you can go on X and get news immediately. Pull up that content literally within the blink of an eye. It's available. It's right in front of you. And that's been a hard issue for newspapers to deal and adapt with. In radio right now, especially local talk radio stations, many of them are doing away with their local morning shows. Or they're syndicated programming 24 hours a day. Maybe a local show here or there, but predominantly it's shows that do not really cost any money. And it's because the revenue is not there. They're having to adapt. Podcasting, live streaming has eaten into radio and the news side. You then look at the music side. Spotify and Pandora and YouTube Music have significantly cut in to revenues that music stations were once able to generate. When you go back 30 or 40 years, if you owned a radio station, it was essentially a license to print money. Now, you were making crap tons of money. Same thing with television. Now that's shifted and changed as conglomerate groups have gobbled up radio and television stations across the country, burying themselves in hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars in some cases, worth of debt. They way overpaid for these stations, and now they're upside down on almost every single one of them. It's a tough business, but it's not any more tough than any other business. Business in general is tough. It's always tough. It's always going to be tough. And there just shouldn't be, in my opinion, any handouts to NPR and PBS. So you've got the outrage that's going on. You've got the folks on the left that cannot wrap their head around why something like this is happening. Meanwhile, you look at the kind of content that is being produced. You look at the political affiliations. You look at the NPR editorial newsroom in Washington, D.C., where there are 87 Democrats and not a single Republican in an editorial position within the newsroom. That's a serious problem. You look at some of the stories that were forgotten or refused by places like NPR and PBS, the Hunter Biden laptop story, discussions in the early days of COVID-19 and the origins by the Wuhan Virology Lab, funded in part by the federal government and colleges like UNC Chapel Hill. Some of the in-your-face progressive liberal ideology programs. There's just not a place for it. If you want to go and produce the content, have at it. Go hog wild. You want me to pay for that content? You want me to subsidize that content with taxpayer dollars? I don't think so. I don't know why that makes any sense. You know what I would fund? Something like C-SPAN. That's something that operates. You're familiar with C-SPAN? They don't receive any federal money. C-SPAN's entire revenue is from cable and satellite providers. It literally is in the name, C-SPAN, the Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network, started in the late 1970s. C-SPAN receives its money because cable and satellite providers pay in to make it possible. And what does C-SPAN do? Well, they have a couple of programs and a couple of shows that they run throughout the day, but most of the time, it's all public affairs. They cover the House and the Senate when they're in session. They cover speeches all day from members of Congress. It's all over the place. C-SPAN, if you wanted to tell me that the federal government was going to fund C-SPAN and make it publicly available to everybody in the United States so that they could watch every hearing that goes on in the federal government and watch every State of the Union and every speech that happens, I mean, they follow presidential campaigns around, I'd say sure. But here's an example of an entity that is, I would argue, providing a substantially better public service than PBS and NPR that is operated solely privately. Now, they are a nonprofit. They're a nonprofit organization, but they're private. And they're funded by cable and satellite providers. And that's how they've been able to generate significant amounts of revenue to run three cable TV channels, C-SPAN 1, 2, and 3, a radio station in Washington, D.C., and everything else that they do. All of their streaming online, all of the various programs that they offer online, and everything associated with it. Replace PBS with C-SPAN. Replace NPR with C-SPAN if you're going to do anything. That'd be great. It's a phenomenal entity. It's something that's actually providing information to the American people. And that's the big issue that I think a lot of folks on the right are finding themselves frustrated with when you look at NPR and you look at PBS. They say this to themselves. The kind of content that is being produced actively goes against everything that I believe and everything that I feel. Why am I continuing to fund this? Why am I paying for, in part, the funding of left-wing propaganda that seeps out of NPR and seeps out of PBS? It's a fair question, and it's one that these entities don't really have an answer to. Now, the PBS chief executive did slam the Trump administration on Friday with this. Public Broadcast Service CEO Paula Krager said that the Republican president's order, quote, threatens our ability to serve the American public with educational programming as we have done for the past 50 plus years. I don't think you guys are providing educational programming anymore. Sure, some of it's educational. But what about your shows, your news programs that play partisan politics? What about your news programs and your reporters and your anchors that take their own political ideology, their own political agenda, and shove it in the face of everybody that is listening or watching your content? She noted that they are currently exploring all options to allow PBS to continue to serve our member stations and all of America. The order instructs that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and other federal agencies cease funding to PBS and National Public Radio, according to the article from PBS.org. I just don't get it. Nobody forced these entities to operate in the manner in which they do. Nobody forced them to start carrying water for Democrats. Nobody forced them to be left-wing news outlets and entities. They did it themselves. And unfortunately, with that decision, they put themselves at risk. They decided to get away from the original mission statements of providing the American public with educational programming, providing the American public with unbalanced news, not opinion, but news. What's going on? What are the facts of the story? No political spin. Now, you want to have guests on to debate an issue? I think that's great. But when you set up a story, when you lay out a story in the description of the facts, when you're clearly pushing left-wing agendas and ideologies, that's not news. You're just being a nonprofit arm of the Democrat Party. You're just pulling weight for your political entity. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing that, right? Conservative talk radio hosts pull weight for Republicans. MSNBC pulls weight for Democrats. Fox News pulls weight for Republicans. There's nothing wrong with that. There's only one big difference. None of those entities receive federal money. NPR and PBS do. That doesn't mean that all of their reporting is bad. That doesn't mean that all of their reporting is biased, because it's not. There's a lot of good work that comes out of local NPR and local PBS stations. I think the State Lines program on PBS North Carolina is a phenomenal show. I think it's a great service to the people of North Carolina. But when you take just that one 30-minute show, and that's what its length is, and you surround it with a bunch of other liberal trash and garbage, it muddies the water. Right? When there's a good local story from NPR that comes out, and then six stories about how awful and terrible Republicans are and how they're racist and sexist, this, that, and the other, you guys are shooting yourselves in the foot. The reason that Uri Berliner wrote this op-ed over at the Free Press about how NPR has lost the trust of the American people. He points to example after example of decisions made with inside the entity that actively were pushing a political ideology. I mean, you can't make this up. This is NPR's post back from the Hunter Biden laptop story. Why haven't you seen any stories from NPR about New York Post's Hunter Biden story? Read more in this week's newsletter. We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not real stories. And we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' times on stories that are just pure distractions. That's what NPR had to say about the Hunter Biden laptop story in October of 2020. They weren't going to waste their time on stories that were not real. You know, they'll spend years talking about how the president of the United States at the time was a Russian puppet, right? They'll talk about Russia collusion for 4.5, 5, 6 years. None of that evidence has ever come to fruition, yet the 100% verifiably true Hunter Biden laptop story was something that NPR wasn't going to touch. Something that NPR was never going to mention. Something that NPR was not possibly going to bring up because they didn't want to waste their listeners' time. They didn't want to waste their precious airwaves paid for in part by you and me to produce and provide coverage of that story. Why? Because it was incredibly damning to his father, who happened to be running for president at the same time. The Hunter Biden laptop story shined a really bad light on Hunter and his father, Joseph Robinette Biden. So NPR chose not to cover it. So why are they losing federal money? Why is there discussions going on? Why did Trump sign an executive order on Thursday? Because of examples like that. You can't claim that you're an educational entity or you're providing a great public service when you're purposefully going to ignore stories that do not suit your political ideology and do not suit your political agenda. It's really not that complicated of an issue. You guys chose to operate and act in this manner, and now you're paying the price for it. And for the individuals that, you know, if there's layoffs and jobs being lost, that sucks. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's not taxpayers in the United States' place to fund left-wing propaganda, which comes out of NPR and comes out of PBS. You want to produce the content? Go wild. Go nuts with it. Find some way else to pay for it. Get more advertising through corporate underwriting. Get more individual contributions through begathons that take place every year through these stations. For days, they're begging for people to call in and donate money. Find a way to fund it. If it's something that's worth listening to, if it's something that's worth watching, people will do so. People are very good at putting their money where their mouth is. And if they want to support this content, give them the opportunity to do so. It's plain and simple as that. So there's, of course, going to be challenges to this because this money is appropriated through Congress, yet Trump has signed the executive order. So likely to see, surprise, surprise, more legal battles as it relates to President Donald Trump and his executive order on Thursday, a calling for the Corporation for Public Broadcasters to no longer receive some of that federal money that has been appropriated for now the past, you know, 60 years or so. Love to see your comments and feedback. You can comment on our YouTube channel or anywhere you get our podcast, The Nick Craig Show, and give me your thoughts on the NPR PBS drama. You can also send me a note on X at Nicholas M. Craig. Want to tell you about one of our great advertisers here this morning, The Law Group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, trust The Law Group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating a real estate transaction, or in the position where you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Located in downtown Wilmington, they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or online at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication that you can rely on, and we appreciate the Law Group for their support of the Nick Craig Show. A little bit of a shorter program this morning. I am filling in for Vince Coakley on the great WBT radio both today and tomorrow. I'll be live from 10 to noon for that show. You can also check it out after the fact by checking out the Vince Coakley radio program wherever you get your podcasts. We're keeping a track of all of the news, including that big wildfire in Brunswick County. We'll have it coming up for you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show live, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, and X, and of course 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.